KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Heathers the Musical, produced by Triangle Productions. The play runs from March 10th through April 2nd at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza in Portland. Based on the classic 1989 film, Westerberg High is ruled by a shoulder-padded, scrunchie-wearing junta, Heather, Heather, and Heather, the hottest and cruelest girls in all of Ohio. But misfit Veronica Sawyer rejects their evil regime for a new boyfriend, the dark and sexy stranger JD, who plans to put the Heathers in their place, 6 feet under. Again, that's Heathers the Musical, March 10th through April 2nd at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio has been broadcasting Portland since 1968. Not only do we provide thought-provoking news, live performance, and excellent music, we provide broadcast training and access. We're asking you to help us celebrate KBOO by voting for us in Willamette Week's Best of Portland poll. Cast your vote during the nomination phase from now until March 31st. There are a few categories KBOO fits into, so write us in as often as you can. Also, don't forget to nominate your favorite shows and hosts too. For more information, including a link to the poll online and category suggestions, go to kboo.fm/BOP2016.
Good morning. My name is Mo Boustern, and I'm so happy to be here on KBOO Community Radio 90.7 with author Eric Lyle, visiting from New York City to talk about his book and art exhibition that he co-curated in 2012, Streetopia. Eric will be appearing tonight along with guests from APANO, the Asian Pacific American Network of Portland, and also City Repair at the Know Your City-sponsored event down at the IPRC tonight at 6 o'clock, 1001 Southeast Division. And so today we're going to just talk a little bit about the book and about the art exhibition and get to know Eric a little bit so you guys can think about coming down and joining us for the discussion and conversation about urban displacement and how arts can save our city. Good morning, Eric.
Hi, Mo. Great to be here.
Yeah. Thanks for coming into KBOO this morning. And I guess first we're going to talk about Streetopia itself, the exhibition, and what led up to it and the project. And I know it's got kind of a long history, and it connects all the way back to groups in San Francisco like the Diggers and all the way forward to now.
To the unwritten future.
To the unwritten future. So what's your role in that? How can you sum that up for us?
Okay, well, we don't have literal connections to the San Francisco Diggers, but it was definitely inspired by some of their ideas and efforts. Streetopia was a sort of a massive anti-gentrification art fair that I helped organize in the Tenderloin in 2012 with Chris Johansson and Cal Spelicich and a bunch of other folks who worked on it as well. The initially, we had been planning kind of a much kind of like less ambitious show. It was just gonna, it was kind of a show about San Francisco's utopian literary and political and arts movements and the way they'd been in conversation with each other over the decades. And then while we were working on the show at a downtown gallery on Market Street called the Luggage Store Gallery, which is in the Tenderloin neighborhood where I lived for many years, the mayor of San Francisco, Ed Lee, who was new at that time, announced his plans to basically redevelop and reshape the Tenderloin completely. And the Tenderloin is, for folks who don't know, is kind of like the last, it's like really like the last low-income neighborhood in San Francisco. San Francisco has become extremely wealthy from the tech industry in the past couple of years. And so the Tenderloin was like one of the last places that like a lot of people could afford to live. And I had been living there for quite some time and doing activism there. So I felt like a really strong connection to fighting some of the plans that the city were bringing down. So what the city wanted to do was turn Market Street, the main street in of San Francisco, into what they were calling a dot-com corridor. And then they were also pushing the idea of the Tenderloin Arts District. So these two plans were really like kind of you know, bringing a lot of real estate speculation into the Tenderloin. The idea of the dot-com corridor was that the city was going to give these unprecedented tax breaks to Silicon Valley corporations to relocate their headquarters onto Market Street in San Francisco. So groups like Twitter and Zendesk and Zynga announced that they were going to move their headquarters into the neighborhood, and immediately the rents started skyrocketing. Like literally within a month, like rents had gone up 60% in the Tenderloin neighborhood. So I was trying to think about, like, you know, I had done. I'm also a reporter. Mm-hmm. And I had a couple years before been in Miami, where I'm from, and I'd been covering Miami Beach Art Basel. And I'd kind of seen there firsthand, like, the way that the city government had really pushed arts-related development. You know, this idea of, like, Richard Florida's book, The Creative Class, like, it has a lot of hold on the imagination of municipalities around the country. This idea, like, oh, you need to plug artists and, you know, and this new word, makers, you know, into low-income areas, and it's going to cause all this development to happen. And so, but what I had seen in Miami was, of course, that, you know, it's just like this kind of bait and switch. There's this idea that, like, that this money is going to help, you know, revitalize neighborhoods in a certain way. But, you know, what I had seen happen there was, you know, that all the low-income neighborhoods instantly became unaffordable to the people that had lived there for years. It wasn't a situation where, you know, the revitalization was actually helping anybody. It was people could no longer afford to live there. Neighborhoods were, you know, taken over by arts walks and that kind of thing. So it was actually kind of had a detrimental effect on the folks that had been there for a while. And I saw that happening again with the Tenderloin. But I also really care about art, and I'm interested in that. So I was thinking, well, like, how can we, you know, how can we think about, like, an art fair that's, like, actually by and for, you know, the people who live in the neighborhood that are, you know, the people that already live there, not for some imagined future group of displacers, right? So the Streetopia, it was kind of born out of that, out of the idea to see what we could make that had a lot of participation in the Tenderloin, and then also kind of using it as, like, a strategy to draw a lot of attention to this imminent displacement, to really, like, to get the general public to sort of force the general public to acknowledge and see what was happening.
And as far as including lots of other artists too, mm-hmm. I mean, I was able to go down for the opening night, and there was a real air of jubilance and jubilation and excitement, and it seemed like the art fair that you created helped provide a voice for all the artists who were dealing with this really disheartening situation happening in their city, to have a voice and to have a place to step in and present their utopia. And you had so many different people involved. I mean, it was mm-hmm. like over 100 different artists involved. Is that right?
Yeah.
Like, there wasn't any exact numbers in the book, because there, you know, it's like basically the entire, you called in all the relationships. And that's one of the things that the book and the exhibition really point out to me, is the wealth that we as artists and people living in those communities that are being really affected by displacement,
right.
is our wealth is really in relationships, which you can't actually purchase that.
Right.
And you were able to, like, really put on an amazing month-long art experience for all these people.
Yeah. You know, let me get more specific then here real quick. So what Streetopia ended up being then, in terms of, like, trying to actualize a strategy, was the idea was, like, let's make this as big as possible and try to take up so much space in this neighborhood where a lot of us had already been working and had been pretty active for years. Like the Luggage Store Gallery is a pretty respected arts group in the Tenderloin neighborhood. That's programming has always been really specifically directed towards who's at hand. You know, like, they make stuff with the people that live in the neighborhood rather than for people outside the neighborhood as much. So I was thinking about, like, trying to get, like, several different venues. We had probably 120 artists, writers, performers. the exhibition was 5 weeks long, and so we had daily programming for every single day of the 5 weeks, right? So it was like you always knew something was going to be happening. You could just go down to the gallery and you'd see a bunch of people, that kind of thing.
And get a meal.
Yeah, and then also the free cafe was a huge component, which is definitely related to the diggers that you brought up. In one of the galleries, we operated what we called the free cafe that was facilitated by artist Cy Wagon. And the free cafe was, you know, was a community kitchen. So rather than being, like a, you know, kind of a Food Not Bombs or charity model where we're like serving food and people are lining up, it was more like, it was a place where people could bring food and make it together and share recipes and share ideas. So in the Tenderloin, like, free food is actually really easy to come by. You know, there's the food banks, people are on food stamps, but like very few people have kitchens because they live in SRO hotels. So people were really excited to have this place where they could come and cook. And also, I just think that you can't really have culture without food, you know, without free food. I think it's a hugely important part of it. If you're going to ask people to come and participate in something, it's like you really should be bringing that aspect to the table as well.
In reading the book, I really feel like the essay that most, the piece of writing that most encompasses what it's like to be at the, to be at Streetopia and to experience that art show was the interview that Ivy Jean did with Cy, because it incorporated so many experiences of the artist coming in, but also that underlying philosophy that you're talking about. So
yeah,
I really liked that interview there.
Oh, cool. Thanks. Yeah, me too. You know, I think that the thing about it is that the Tenderloin is a part of town that's really denigrated in San Francisco. You know, mm-hmm. So I've been living there for years. You open up the Chronicle, the San Francisco Chronicle, on any day, and there'll be an article about, like, it's basically likening, you know, the people in my neighborhood to garbage. You know, so right. We need to clean up the streets, right. You know, and like a lot of really sensational coverage. And people talk about the Tenderloin like, oh, you know, it's like crack zombies like unleashing a wave of urine on the streets. I mean, it's like so awful the way people talk about the Tenderloin. So, but you know, but living there, I know that there actually is this really tremendous community there. I mean, it's a place that lacks a lot of material resources, but people really have a lot of strong support for each other. So the projects that we were trying to do were really about amplifying that sense of community that's already there. To combat that negative image, but and also to combat the idea that it was like some kind of wasteland that was ripe for any kind of redevelopment, because we're like, hey, we're here. This is like a real place, you know?
Once again, we're talking with author, artist, and activist Eric Lyle, who'll be appearing tonight on a panel and discussion with other urban conversationalists at the IPRC at 1001 Southeast Division tonight at 6 p.m. And we're talking about his art show, art exhibition, art fair, Streetopia, and also the book. And so moving into talking a little bit more about the book, what I really appreciated about that is, in addition to the immediacy of the experience of the art show or the art fair, going there and dipping in and out of that 5 week experience, the book provides a real, it's a real community experience. Many different voices that were in the show are represented in the book, but also your essays in particular really provide a historical context in many, many ways, like bringing forward the yellow journalism that just puts across, you were just speaking about the way the residents of the Tenderloin are maligned in the press in order to sway city opinion, to bring in developers, and your essay about Market Street that talks about all the buildings that are unrented and contribute to a street being seen as not vibrant or not participating in the urban experience, and yet none of these landlords will rent to anybody because they're all waiting for somebody, the highest bidder or Twitter or something, to come in. So I really feel like these are, from where I'm coming from, the importance of the book and also the immediacy of the book in a way expresses both the immediacy of the being at the show, but also ties it forward and back to the historical context.
Well, thanks for saying that. Yeah, there are quite a few really cool contributors in this book. Many of them were involved in the show in some way, and then other people were just are just contributing their work to this book. So the book gathers together a lot of the art from the show, and then considers some of the effectiveness of the projects. And so there's pieces in here by Rebecca Solnit, Chris Krauss, Sarah Schulman's in here, Sam Green, Daphne Gottlieb, the muckraking journalist Adam Clay Thompson. You know, so there's a lot of really cool folks. Joey Lone's in here, yeah. So lots of really cool folks have contributed to this project, and I think that was actually kind of like Streetopia really had that like snowball effect, like, you know, and that's kind of a wonderful thing about San Francisco's kind of historic activist artist vibe too, has always been that like, if you put out a template for something that sounds exciting, like everybody's happy to like jump in and like contribute their part of it in this really like cool way where you don't have to really overly prescribe, hey, you do this, but everybody will bring something to the table.
And that's a testament also to your curation and the team that you were a part of, that you were able to work in that model. I mean, that's not something that everybody can do, where you can just say like, well, how about something about passenger pigeons or anything that would relate? Mm-hmm. And then you guys can find, the team that was putting this together could find a place. And mm-hmm. also the editing of the book and the design of the book itself is all mm-hmm. people, relationships that you have with people. And the book itself, full of photographs from the event, full of photographs that are historical, that illustrate all the points. It's a beautiful book. It's well made.
Thanks.
It'll be available tonight for sale, yes?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a gorgeous book. Also very, you know, sturdy and heavy, all those that shiny paper that for the art photos.
It's very dense and does feel like a brick in your hand, you know?
And we all know what roles brick plays, urban displacement, foundations. Yeah. So, yeah. And how do you feel like this book and your experience in San Francisco relates? I mean, you've been coming to Portland for over 20 years.
That's true, yeah.
And you've been participating. I mean, for a lot of us, I've known you for a long time, and our scene or whatever you want to call it. Like, I make a zine, I've played in bands, travel around. It is national. Like, we know each other all over the place. We've kept track of each other for 20 years. And so for me, having you in Portland isn't that unusual. Mm-hmm. And going down to San Francisco to see your show wasn't that unusual.
Uh-huh.
I was just another face in the crowd.
And bringing us a bunch of food from the co-op.
Yeah, somebody else. I just was the messenger on that one, just bringing it down. But how do you feel like this experience relates to Portland and Portland's experience right now of aggressive development and aggressive change? That is, I mean, really intense right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, well, as you say, I have been coming to Portland for quite some time. I do feel like I have strong connections with a lot of really wonderful close friends here. So I do come here like, you know, 2 or 3 times a year. And yeah, it really has changed quite a bit. And I recognize that everybody's really struggling to find housing right now. That the housing is really, the rents have really gone through the roof here. So I think this is characteristic of everywhere. In the United States and really like in worldwide urban areas right now. And there was a really important article in the New York Times a year ago about rents that talked about people paying the number of cities where people are paying over 30% of their income for rent, you know, is enormous in the United States right now. And that's not just like large cities, it's like little places like Hattiesburg, Mississippi. So rent is really like a huge problem right now. Real estate speculation is really driving the economy in a lot of places, right? I mean, so really, you know, I think like, you know, I was just in Seattle, the same things are happening there. You know, it's like, you know, this is like happening everywhere. So, I don't know more specifically.
Well, I'm just wondering, how do you see Streetopia, the art fair that you participate in? Is that something that you feel could be brought to other cities? Do you feel like, I mean,
right.
In my reading of it, it seemed like the luggage the luggage gallery was very integral to the experience. It gave you guys a locus. It gave you guys a spot right in the area where it was almost like in the blister that was the heart of everybody's painful experience of displacement. Mm-hmm. And the one individual in charge of the luggage store that you mention in the book, there's a man who you guys would be like, can we build a tunnel to the Mint? And he'd be like, let me think about it. Not that you guys built a tunnel to the Mint, but I mean, you guys built a two-story load-bearing loft in there with volunteer carpentry and scavenged and donated wood. And so, like, when you have a situation like that that is built on relationships that have been built up over 10, 20 years, is that possible to go to other cities and be like, well, here's how you can do it. How Portland can respond to this.
Right. Well,
how can that provide a model of positive change for people here? Because it's so easy to go into the negative.
Well, there's a lot there. So let's pick that apart and hit it from a couple of angles. For one thing, okay, so the Streetopia is not a franchise.
Right.
This is not a brand. I'm not attempting to replicate this anywhere else. Like, so this is not like my thing. This is not going around trying to like get people to do my thing in other cities. So,
branded activism.
Yeah, yeah. And the book is not, in many ways, the book is a manual of sorts of like of all kinds of different ideas that you might consider to empower yourself to do things, but it's not about how to do the thing we did. So just, you know, when we use the word utopia in a lot of the writing in this, you know, we're talking about utopian aspirations, but for us that word meant a process of becoming. You know, it was like a practice. It wasn't about like a destination to arrive at. It was about like people getting together and figuring it out. So of course that can be replicated in Portland. Of course there's strong communities here that have been together for decades and all throughout the city. What I imagine is that there's all kinds of strong communities that actually don't quite know each other because of the spatial layout of the city or because they're in different parts of town or different class backgrounds or different racial backgrounds. And I think that Streetopia was about, in San Francisco, was about bringing everyone together and seeing each other in real life in the same place, in the same room, not on the computer, but like getting everybody under one roof in a situation where they could recognize the urgency of what was happening, that in 2011 and 12, the dot-com economy was ratcheting up one more time, worse than it was in the late 90s. So I think that what people in Portland can get out of this, not so much as a specific thing, like can we make this kind of an art fair happen, but it's the art fair idea of it was really specific to the circumstances of what we had. I saw that as a way, because I knew a lot of artists who were like progressive and politically involved and politically motivated. I saw that as a way to get attention to the situation in my neighborhood.
And again, we're talking with artist, activist, and author Eric Lyle, who will be speaking tonight with members of the Portland community at the Independent Publishing Resource Center, 1001 Southeast Division, at 6 o'clock. And we've got about 8 more minutes to talk about this. But the conversation and making those connections with communities that maybe don't know each other is maybe a little bit what we're hoping to do tonight.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, I'd like to urge people to come down and you know, participate in this discussion. And, you know, like I think in Seattle the other night we did this talk at Left Bank. And afterwards there was quite a, you know, lengthy discussion. And, you know, I kind of just sat back and let people in the audience talk to each other. You know, and there were definitely people there that, you know, were announcing projects and were like, oh, wait, I didn't know about that. Okay, and, you know, and just trying to, you know, I could see, like, everyone who would come to the show, you know, there were, like, little pockets of two and three people that were obviously together, but they didn't all know each other, you know? Mm-hmm. So, a lot of Streetopia was really about, it was about recognizing the emergency and the crisis and about thinking about assessing the strength of what's already there and then figuring out a way to imagine it like a little bit beyond, a little bit better. So
bringing the word emergence out of emergency.
Exactly. So the luggage store gallery had been operating you know, like a wonderful green space called mm-hmm. the Tenderloin National Forest that they had created in what had been an alley before.
How long did that take? That's such an awesome story.
Well, they had worked on it for, you know, over a decade.
It was just a gradual taking back of discarded space.
Yeah, you know, just to quickly explain it, there is an alley next to their gallery in the Tenderloin that the director Daryl Smith and the artist Sarah Lewis and some other folks started kind of reclaiming, we'll say, you know, direct action, ripping up some concrete, planting a little grass, putting a redwood in the back, you know, that kind of thing. And then after a couple of years, it became this really wonderful green space and public park in an area that has no green space,
or right.
a very dense urban core. So that's a thing that's already a very successful intervention into public space mm-hmm. that people in the neighborhood really love and respect. So if you're like, well, okay, but what's one more step with this? Oh, like what if everybody then like makes food together there, right?
Right.
And that's something that can happen without starting a social movement right away. Or like we don't necessarily need to go live in tents downtown and occupy a plaza in order to like have mutual aid and like take care of our neighbors and like think about ways to organize. So I guess it's about thinking about organization outside of, instead of activism, really. It's like a way mm-hmm. to think about how
long-term sustainable support,
how do people come together and build like alternative structures to the mainstream society. A lot of it's really intangible. You know, the results of Streetopia are like people like getting to know each other, trust each other, know that they have each other's back, they make positive things together, and then they have new connections. And I think that there's, I know that there's all kinds of ways in Portland that different groups could be like reaching out to each other and like trying to expand in this time of crisis mm-hmm. to fight back against some of this development.
Mm-hmm. I know it's really hard to think about expansion when so much of one's time is taken up with just trying to
totally
take care of the real basics, and
yeah,
it's just tough. You
know, part of the emergency.
It is. It yeah. really is, and it's hard to. I mean, it's a lot easier to be polite and kind and generous when mm-hmm. you're not hearing the alarm bells going off, or you know where the rent's coming from for the next 3 months, or even
yeah.
you know.
Can I just, let me just add
one
thing real fast. So is, another point of this though is that I wanted to in some of the writing in this book and through the example of the show, think about, I think there's this kind of idea that like artists are the sole cause of gentrification, right? Like as soon as an artist moves into a low income neighborhood, the neighborhood's over, you know? And I really wanted to counter that. I think mm-hmm. that, I think an artist has a choice. I think artists can align themselves and seek solidarity with communities and find commonality to work towards goals, or they can cash in their privilege and not care and screw over neighborhoods. So yeah.
It's really just that
one or the other. How do you want to participate?
Right. That yeah. is, and that's the question that maybe we'll be hearing tonight at the event at the Independent Publishing Resource Center, 1001 Southeast Division, where Eric will be joined by members from, I think it's, is it Luann Algoso who'll be there tonight? From the Asian Pacific American Network of Portland, Apano, and also Kirk Rhea from City
Kirk,
Repair. Is it Kirk?
I think Kirk couldn't come, but someone else from City Repair will be present.
And it's an event sponsored by Know Your City. If you want to know more about the event, you can go to Know Your City or the IPRC.org website. And this has been a conversation with artist mm-hmm. and author visiting from New York City, Eric Lyle, and he'll be present talking about his book and art fair Streetopia tonight, and you will be able to get a copy of the book. And that's all we have time for this morning. Thanks so much for joining us down here, Eric.
Great. Thanks, Mo. Thank you.
Caboo Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Lady Aoi, produced by Imago Theater. The play runs from March 11th through the 27th at the Imago Theater in Portland. Set in a hospital in 1956, the Lady Aoi is an erotic ghost story written by Yukio Mashima based on a 15th century no play. Again, that's the Lady Aoi, March 11th through March 27th at the Imago Theater, 17 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Kboo Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Pan-African film series hosted by the All African People's Revolutionary Party. The film this month is Assata Shakur Talks About Socialist Development in Cuba, showing Wednesday, March 30th at 6 p.m. at the Portland State University Smith Memorial Student Union in room 236. The former Black Panther and member of the Black Liberation Army, who has had political asylum in Cuba since 1984, talks about socialist practices in Cuba, racism, patriarchy, and the way forward for socialist politics. Again, that's Assata Shakur Talks About Socialist Development in Cuba, Wednesday, March 30th at 6 p.m. at the Smith Memorial Student Union in room 236 at Portland State University, 1825 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub, Portland's neighborhood theater since 1924, independently owned and operated, featuring modern, independent, and classic films, microbrews, pizza, and salads, located at East Burnside and 28th in Portland, laurelhursttheater.com.